Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with Nazi Germany just referenced, and as the Jewish New Year arrives at sundown tonight, the year 5774, comes at a time when anti-Semitism appears to be on the rise around the world. The U.S. State Department's annual report on religious freedom found an increase in anti-Semitic incidents and Holocaust denial. It singled out Egypt, Iran, and Venezuela, where government-condoned anti-Semitic expression was seen as contributing to incidents of violence and desecration. A new book sounds an even louder alarm. It's The Devil That Never Dies, The Rise and Threat of Global Anti-Semitism, by former Harvard professor Daniel Jonah Goldhagen, best known for his earlier book, Hitler's Willing Executioners, about popular anti-Semitism in Germany during the Nazi era. Daniel Jonah Goldhagen joins me now. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And I'm interested in your chapter called Today's Demonology. Today's Demonology. Is the way that people tend to demonize Jews today different from the Nazi era or any other era and different in different parts of the world?
What we now see in the world is what can be called a third era of anti-Semitism. First was religious anti-Semitism, then came the modern anti-Semitism, of which Nazi anti-Semitism was the most horrifying example, and now we've entered a third phase, which can be called global anti-Semitism. And this book, while analyzing anew the nature of anti-Semitism fundamentally, focuses mostly on global anti-Semitism, and it is different. It's different insofar as anti-Semitism for the first time exists around the world, not just in Europe, not just in the Islamic countries, but it's an international force carried on the internet, can be found everywhere. In fact, in Asia, surveys show there are hundreds of millions, indeed billions of people are anti-Semitic, most of whom have never seen a Jew, met a Jew, and know nothing about Jews except for the anti-Semitism they've imbibed.
Why now? In Asia?
Because the international discourse, as it's called, the conversation, has been spread so much around the world through the internet, through digital television, through the propagandizing, to use an old-fashioned word, of governments that are behind the spread of anti-Semitism, mainly in the Arab and Islamic world, that it reaches everywhere. Surveys show that in China and India and in other Asian countries, 30, 40, 50% of people have unfavorable views of Jews. It's really just astonishing.
That recent State Department report I mentioned singled out Egypt, Iran, and Venezuela as countries of particular concern right now. Would you agree with that?
There are countries of particular concern, but they're not the only ones. In fact, countries of Europe are also of great concern. Surveys of Europeans across the European Union consistently show that upward 50% of the people have fantastical demonological images of Jews. Jews have too much power in business. Jews have too much power in finance. Jews are Israel, which they focus on, is conducting a war of extermination against the Palestinians, which, whatever you think about Israel and the Middle East conflict, and however critical you may be, is simply an absurd account of what Israel is doing. And these views, by the way, Jews have too much power in business and so on, in countries where Jews sometimes form less than 0.1% of the population, just show that the old anti-Semitism is still powerful, and it is feeding the new anti-Semitism, which is global in reach. And let me just add a couple of things about global anti-Semitism that will interest the listeners. The basic imagery of Jews has changed from Jew as a sly, behind-the-scenes, conniving Shylock to today's image, which is of the marauding Jews, Rambo, the Israeli soldier with a boot on the throat of the Palestinians, or American Jews supposedly flexing their muscles and controlling the United States. Change in imagery is very fundamental.
But that's a political characterization. And I'm sure you'd agree there needs to be a way to criticize Israel politically without being accused of anti-Semitism.
Sure, of course. And I, too, am critical of Israel in a variety of ways. You can say Israel should negotiate differently with the Palestinians. Israel should get out of the West Bank and so on and so forth. That's perfectly legitimate. But when charges are made that meet clear criteria that experts use to identify any prejudice, such as having nothing to do with reality, such as being held onto even though the evidence is pointed to again and again how false they are, such as generalizing about all people in a country or reducing a person in all his complexity to nothing but his identity, in this case as a Jew. This is what many critics, so-called critics of Israel, do, what people who are anti-Israel in their orientation do, and it's just clearly anti-Semitic.
My guest is Daniel Jonah, and forgive me, is it Goldhagen or Goldhagen?
Goldhagen, like Copenhagen.
I apologize for saying it the other way before, who many of you may know most from his earlier book, Hitler's Willing Executioners, now the author of The Devil That Never Dies, The Rise and Threat of Global Antisemitism. In that chapter, Today's Demonology, there's a section I found very interesting in which you compare the Quran and the New Testament. And you conclude that while the Quran dehumanizes Jews and compares them to pigs and apes and says God condemns them to suffering, the Quran also has positive statements about Jews, like that they are also people of the book. While in the Christian Bible, the Jews are the central villains. And you say history shows the majority Muslim societies comparatively better treated Jews over the centuries in societies where Muslims were in charge. Why do you compare the two holy books?
In writing about anti-Semitism, one has to go back to its sources and also look at the contemporary world. And when you go back to its sources are clearly in Christianity in Europe and in the Quran, in Islamic teachings in the Middle East and in Islamic countries. So that's just critical for telling the story. And what they establish is something which I call the foundational anti-Semitic paradigm, which is a fundamental view of Jews that Jews are different from non-Jews, that they are noxious, that they are willfully, that they will harm upon others, and that they're powerful and dangerous. And whatever the charges are, whether it's that Jews are poisoning wells or Jews are threatening other countries, this is the foundational notion that is carried through the ages, and it comes from there. However, if you want to update things, you need to look at the contemporary scene and the way in which anti-Semitism has evolved to take on the idiom of the day. And today's idiom is globalization. So instead of in Europe, for example, people charging local Jews with harming local economies and local peoples, poisoning wells or wrecking the financial system locally, instead they look abroad internationally, globally, and they see two great powers out there of Jews, Israel and Jews in the United States. And so the way in which the demonology has shifted has been in line with globalization and in another way as well. Now you have flows of anti-Semitism through the internet, digital media, and the cross currents of civilizations, so that anti-Semitism that appears in one place will go to second place, be reimported to the first place, and so on, while before it was always localized and centralized in the religious centers of the world.
I wonder if the relationship between Judaism and Christianity in the United States today, and given the sorry history, gives you hope for eliminating or minimizing anti-Semitism in the future. Considering that the Christian Bible is the worst of the books in terms of demonizing Jews, and that Christian societies have for most of time been worse than Muslim societies in terms of anti-Semitism, as you write, does it also provide a cause for hope? Because in this country today, Christians seem to embrace Jews. Maybe it's organized Christianity. Tell me your impression. But the Christian right, for example, once arguably among the worst American anti-Semitic population groups, now holds defense of Israel as an extremely high priority. And with Islam as suspect as it is in the United States, I think we hear the term Judeo-Christian a lot in this country in political as well as religious terms, making Judaism and Christianity seem as one. Is that a sign that anti-Semitism can be defeated or diminished, or do you think it's an illusion?
It's certainly right that you focus on the historical sources in Christianity and Islam for anti-Semitism, but it might mislead the listeners to suggest that Christianity is the driving force of anti-Semitism today. It is not at all. And after the Holocaust, many Christian denominations and the Catholic Church as well, Protestant denominations, rehabilitated themselves with regard to anti-Semitism and have very different teachings today. And you're right to point out how anti-Semitism has declined in the United States. And in fact, American Jews and non-Jews in the United States aren't sufficiently aware of how dangerous it is out there, because the United States really is the island in the world that is resisting more or less the vast anti-Semitic global tide that is taking place. And so it's not felt here as much. In Europe, Jewish institutions are under siege. They're like fortresses. They have police. They have barricades. They have guards. There are attacks and murders of Jews in Europe. Jews don't let their children wear kippot or Stars of David in public for fear of them being attacked. In the United States, anti-Semitism has declined markedly in the last 45 years. Survey research shows this, and it does hold out hope, because what we've established in the United States is that anti-Semitism may not be brought into the public sphere. It's not part of the public discourse of this country, and when you achieve that, then it dissipates, it no longer gets reinforced, it no longer gets spread, and if this can be achieved in other countries, a lot of progress can be made.
There often tends to be a competition as well for victimhood status among all kinds of groups, and there are certainly a lot of anti-Islam bias in the United States since 9/11. Do you think Jews and Muslims could make common global cause, despite the obvious problems
Sure.
between the two groups, to fight religious persecution and hate in general?
One of the things that I am very clear about in the book is that we have to be careful about generalizing to entire groups. And there are many Muslims who are not anti-Semitic and who oppose anti-Semitism and oppose literal readings of the Quran that have anti-Semitic resources. And on the local level, and even at times nationally, Muslim groups and Jewish groups work in the community to fight hatred together. And there's no reason they can't continue, and there's no reason this can't be spread. It's important to say that in the context of American society, Muslim groups are much more liberal than they are in many other countries, and much more pluralistic and much more tolerant and much more willing and able and to work cross-communally with other groups. But this doesn't change the fact that around the world we have global anti-Semitism. If you want to understand it, you need to rethink anti-Semitism from the ground up, and that's what I try to do in this book.
Daniel Jonah Goldhagen, author of The Devil That Never Dies, The Rise and Threat of Global Anti-Semitism. I wish you a happy and a hate-free New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.